Captain, Captain, I think we're coming up on our target.
Metal stations?
Just what is our target, Bosun?
Why, the GBN, sir.
Ha! Prepare to launch torpedoes on my mark.
Mark, my name's Franz, sir.
No, I mean shoot!
What happened?
Launch the torpedoes, Lieutenant.
Why didn't you say so, sir?
Ah!
Bye, Kobolds. I'll never get the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbncom.com. But, let's get out of the way just in case.
Welcome to the Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on. This is Ethan from the future. I'm coming back in time here just to say hi. This week's episode is a little bit shorter than usual, just because last week's episode was really, well, longer than usual. So we're making up for it this week. We just really wanted to get the feedback in last week, so we did. So just the only thing going on this week is really going to be our three-parter, and Jeremy's going to finish up talking about his world. Not much else going on. We're not going to have any feedback this time because we really don't have any. Not much feedback really to go into, but we are working on getting the forums going as far as getting topics up there. So more about that in the random encounters. So enjoy Jeremy talking about his world, and I'll talk to you after that.
Oh, that's not right.
In a broken world where magic has been outlawed.
The entire village knows your candles have a little somewhat special about them.
Like mother, like daughter.
Hang her.
She nearly burned the village down.
One family rules it all.
He did this. He killed my baby. He's a monster. No better than the fiend he calls a father.
One woman cursed with magic.
What have I done?
Becomes the pawn in a game of thrones that will tear the world apart.
Who is the woman you're so urgent to find?
Her mother.
Does she wear the red?
I'm not sure, my lord. It is said that she is breathable. By all indications, though, she's unable to control it.
You will kill her.
Of course, my lord.
Do you think he knows?
When we find the woman, she will destroy him for us.
When her daughter is stolen...
Joss! They stole my Joss!
She wants only one thing, to get her back.
You were brave to have come here for me, my dear. You have no idea how foolish that bravery was, though. She was just a child. She was there to serve you.
What do you know of a mother's love? I will be killing you.
But that all changes when she finds her.
What have they done to you?
Join me. Together we can stop the Overlord. The children will go free.
Never!
Daughter of the Sun, the epic fantasy novel by Lana Eizel. Find out more about the novel, the author, and the podcast at LonnieEzel.com.
The ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
Well, I will apologize now since I seem to have the plague, so my voice is somewhat on the soft side.
Bubonic plague.
Yeah, it always seems to happen when I am aiming for a holiday and a day off, and Of course, as we record this, Valentine's Day is coming up. And
leprosy.
I don't know why I would even try to set anything up, but that's neither here nor there. Actually, I think it's probably bubonic, not leprosy. Not leprosy. Yeah. But anyway.
You're not falling apart?
Not as of yet.
No, okay. But his buboes are growing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I will try to carry on and talk about the infinite ultimate power that lies in one hand and in the other.
Because you've been developing your world for a very long time.
Long time.
You've had a lot more people playing it.
Before we get into world information, let me explain how my world started. Way back when, it was just my brother and I, and we had played other games. We started with Hero Quest, which has its own little world, and we played that a lot. We started out by first creating the rest of that world, the rest of Hero Quest world. That somewhat worked. It was okay. Then I picked up the D&D Cyclopedia, I believe. It wasn't second edition. It was pre-second edition. It was this white book with this big old dragon on the front, this poor unfortunate warrior.
It was the D&D rules cyclopedia.
Yeah, it was like, it was weird.
Wasn't it like all the rules in the
book? It was everything. Yeah. At that point, elves
were
fighter mages.
That was in second edition. It was just
wasn't second edition. No, it was before second. It was not quite. It was like basic rules, I guess.
Really,
or something.
It would have had everything because I've seen the book and I knew it came out during.
Oh,
second edition.
I love that book. I used that book so much in gaming that it fell apart. But I would like to find a copy. Yeah, I got rid of it finally. But anyway, in that book, you know, elves. Could only get up to level 12, and they were fighter mages. Dwarves were fighters, could only get up to, like, level 9. The only race that could be different classes were humans, and even they were limited, but they could go above level 12.
To level 15.
You had alignment languages.
Yep.
I'm not even going to say anything else on that.
I speak kind of good.
We didn't even know what alignment was at that point. We never read that far.
Didn't know that alignment sucked at that point.
But anyway. So we started to create a game, or a world at that point, or I started creating a world. And still being a child at that point, I really just took everything I knew or thought I knew and decided that, well, if it doesn't belong on Earth, it's going to get dumped somewhere else. So it got dumped in my world. You had random Atlanteans running around. You had dinosaurs running around. You had pirates, swashbucklers, elves. There was a lot of Tolkien-esque things about it because both my mom, my mom loves Tolkien, and we grew up with Tolkien, so there's a lot of that in there. It was just a fun world, but it had no form. It was basically just a world of everything else. All the fantasies in all the myths in the Earth, well, they couldn't take place on Earth, so they took place on my world. I threw some of that out. I've adopted some of those ideas and kept a few of those. I don't use my world as a dumping ground anymore. It's more of a interplanetary, you might say, bus station almost. A lot of people, not a bus station. There's probably a better term for it. It's more of kind of the background where sometimes people get lost and end up.
International rest stop.
A rest stop might be, whether they're continuing on or not. After that, you know, as time went on, I started developing my deities. I've always had a great fascination with both Greek and Roman deities. So, of course, there's tons of gods and goddesses on my world. I've gone through multiple lists of them. They're again going through another change. The gods are very important in my world. Religion, spirituality, faith, that's very important. All that kind of consolidated. Magic in itself is very important. As time went on, the world finally developed so that it's an actual world. The name of the world is Thera. That's Theyra. We're not going to talk about creation myths in this particular one. That is something I would like to get into a little bit later, but we'll talk about that
next episode.
But I developed the races a lot more. You have some of your typical races. You have elves who are broken down with different groups: wood elves, high elves, sea elves, even a mountain elf. It's elemental, basically. The elves in my world are very long-lived. They are actually immortal when it comes to age. The only thing that can really... they die through violence. Some diseases, but mostly violence. Elves, and this is borrowing from Tolkien in a sense, elves do reach a particular age that most of them do leave Thera itself and will travel to the elven afterlife to basically retire. You have the dwarven races, you have the mountain dwarves and the hill dwarves, digging deep into the earth, very ancient people. The halflings of my world, there's only one type of halfling. They're very new. What that means, nobody knows, but even the halfling state, they're very new to the world. Whether that means they were just created recently, if they just shown up in the world, who knows? But they are new. They were worshipping some of the other deities. They now have their own patron deity. They've even developed their own language. But the halflings, they have small villages. For the most part, they do some traveling and such. They're just halflings. Gnomes have always existed. Again, they're an ancient race. I like the forest gnomes a little bit more than the hill gnomes. They're very natural, smaller races. You, of course, have the humans, and humans are broken up into different sub-races. One thing to remember on my world is it's not... skin color is not important. A human who is black-skinned and white-skinned, that won't cause any problems. That type of discrepancy is not the problem. What does cause problems is the cultural background, in the sense of, are you an Andradian human? Are you a Rusk human? There's all sorts of different human subgroups. And that's where people get into problems. One thing about my world is it's very, very large. Nobody's quite sure how big it is. Nobody's sure how many continents there are. Most people do not travel from the continent. They know there's at least two continents because the Atlanteans, who have come to my world from someplace called Earth, do dwell on another continent and have a tendency to get lost. So they do know there's at least another continent, and seafarers do find other lands out in the ocean. My world is, like I said, nobody's quite sure, but probably the size of Jupiter. I know for you science buffs out there, how is gravity going to work? How is that going to work? Well,
he says this glaring at me.
That does not matter in this case. It's not my place to explain that. But let's just say that a human or any creature from my world can survive on an Earth-like gravity. The gravity is the same for whatever reason. And as time goes on, my world is developing more scientifically, so that could play into things. We'll see. The main continent is the Aurelian continent. It's vast. I mean, it's huge. Take all the continents on Earth, put them together, that may fit it.
No, it's not. It's like half the size.
It's huge. It covers jungles and North American type temperate areas.
The freaking
deserts.
Deserts.
The freaking blight.
Cold, well, we'll get to the blight. Cold damn regions. It just covers everything. On the west, you have the more medieval style empires. The biggest empire being the Andradian Empire. But on the eastern side, you have the empire that kind of balances it off. It's more of an oriental, Japanese, Chinese, Persian kind of mix. The Cerulean Empire, which is broken up between many fiefdoms and things like that. They have their own empire. But there's tons of little kingdoms and such. On the far west, there is a little area, the Seolian principalities, which are seagoing individuals that do have land areas.
The Seolian ones.
All sorts of different groups. Magic is very, very important in my world. One thing to think about it is this way. The world's so big, there's going to be villagers that are scared of magic to a point, but most people will understand that there's good and bad magic. They might not understand the difference between a druid, a cleric, a mage, a sorcerer, but they understand that, well, this individual casts this magic, it made my field grow, that's good magic, but they also believe people can curse them and such. Great displays of magic, while not common, I think they're more common than some worlds. A wizard casting a meteor swarm, while dangerous and not necessarily going to happen every day, can happen, and probably has. The armies, the governments of the world use magic to their advantage. A powerful empire on my world will use magic. Their soldiers will have magical items. They will have healing potions. They will have medics. They will have all of that because it's such a big thing. The gods also play a very important role in my world. Without the gods, certain things would not be possible. Travel would not be possible. Because the world's so big, how is an empire even going to stay together? Well, part of that is because of the gods. The gods help the world go around. Thera itself does exist in a solar system. There are other planets. Thera has two moons, one of which is inhabited. None of the players have ever traveled to that moon, but one of the moons is inhabited. The other moon, no one's quite sure. The other planets in the solar system we won't discuss today. But there is other stuff out there. There is a whole universe. Let's see. Something about my world that I always try to throw in some neat quirks here and there. I like things that are different. I don't necessarily stick with the common monsters all the time. Just because you run into an orc, it doesn't necessarily mean the orc is going to be evil. There's all sorts of different races. I do believe in alignment, but I try to be as realistic with it as possible, as much as you can be in a game. One thing on my world is you've got goblins. This is always, it's kind of funny, I know, but if anybody says Harry Potter, I'm going to send Mansquito after you. I've developed my goblins a long time before that, long time before WoW, long time before all that. There's two types of goblins. A long time ago in my world, the goblins decided that fighting and being eaten by monsters and stuff was just not fun. It was not helping anything out. Their god, at that point, he discovered money. Not that money wasn't there. He just discovered it for himself. And he discovered he liked money. And he liked profit. And he became the god of commerce very quickly. Ziggy, the goblin god, is the richest god in the world. Maybe even the universe, nobody's sure. The goblins.
Ziggy rules.
The goblins. There are two types of goblins now.
If I need to play a priest of Ziggy or something.
There are the normal goblins who have developed into merchants, and there's the savage goblins. Savage goblins, your normal goblins, uneducated. Nobody likes them. They get into your trash, they bite you, they eat you. Even the goblins kill them. But the goblins themselves that worship Ziggy, they have created almost a perfect society. They have their own kingdom. Their kingdom is built on profit. There's certain rules to this profit. Since the goblins were enslaved in the past, they don't believe in slavery. They will not sell slaves. They also will not rip you off. Now, there's a difference between this. Some people say, well, when you buy something from a goblin on my world, you're being ripped off. No. Goblins understand the value of their items. And people that purchase them do not. So the prices you're paying may be higher, but they understand those values. They also are willing to send merchant caravans anywhere. Their empire, or they don't have an empire, they have a kingdom. Within their kingdom, no goblin citizen starves. No goblin citizen is without a home. Everybody works. Their whole goal is to gain more profit. But there are certain rules to the game. It used to be that I kind of considered them like Ferengi. But Ferengi are too cutthroat. They're too underhanded, and they're willing to screw both themselves, both their own kind as well as others, over. While the goblins on my world more have a tendency to work together to profit everyone who is goblin. That's one of those quirks I like to throw out there. The weather patterns on my world are, again, a lot of it has to do with magic and the gods. Nobody's quite sure what would happen if the spirits and the gods themselves didn't help weather along. On a world my size, the oceans would be huge. It would be unfortunate without some protection. There's no such thing as an atheist on my world. The closest thing are those individuals who don't believe the gods are divine beings. One thing I like to throw out is if you decide not to believe in the gods decide not to believe in you. My world does still have a tendency to collect people from everywhere. You will find... you may find gunslingers from the Old West. There's a whole culture of the Atlanteans. Once Atlantis sunk and or was covered in ice and or was destroyed by technology, whichever story you decide to go with, the Atlanteans fled to my world. Also, there is a very tenacious group of Romans who got lost up in the Alps and ended up in my world and enslaved some of the local people and have a Roman Empire, and they brought their own deities along. So that does allow for a lot of interesting players. I've let my players basically, if they can think of a concept, I'll probably let them play it. That can even go from the far future. I played in the Mythical Age. My world is starting to move more into a kind of a Napoleonic Age. The nice thing about it is its size, though, is making the spread of gunpowder and weapons, like guns, very slow. So the change isn't going to mess anything up. I believe the mixture of magic technology will actually make some interesting things happen. I also like interesting locations. I have the Eternal Forest, which is a kind of a demiplane. It has a tendency to move around my world. It mostly stays within the Blight. You have to sometimes be careful going into large forests because you may enter the Eternal Forest, and if you do, there's not a lot of chance of getting out because the Eternal Forest is, well, eternal. There's some other locations, Fount of the Youth, Fount of Immortality, various, I mean, there's all sorts of magical locations for the players to visit. In the center of the main continent, there is this thing called the Blight. Now, the Blight was created through some magical as well as natural catastrophes. Much of the Blight used to be the Dwarven Empire. There was a kind of a problem with... there was a destruction of the Dwarven Empire that created part of the Blight. There's also a divine war that caused the other part of the Blight. Blight used to be just a plane of death and nothingness. It's overgrown a lot. There's tons of mountains and grasslands and different types of territory in there now. There's a lot of people that live in there. The Blight, in my opinion, is kind of like the Old West in the sense that nobody owns the land, so anybody can go out there, claim some land, build a town. I think my players have a lot more fun playing in the Blight just because there's not a lot of rules. And they can get along. They can kind of create their own empire out there and such. So that's just my world in a nutshell.
And live like gods amongst worms.
They can try to do that too. Right now they're being chased by a demi-lich, so
wonderful.
We'll see how the gods among worms will work out.
Out of the frying pan and the fire. Not the frying pan into the mist of Ravenloft.
Oh, my world does have a tendency to connect to other worlds. It is very close to Earth. And so I like to do crossover
works. There's a Roman section.
Yeah, yeah, like I said, that's where those Romans wandered in.
Yeah.
You said your world's name is Thera?
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the name of the other planet they think hit Earth to create the moon.
Yeah, that's...
Isn't that cool?
That happened before.
Maybe Thera hit Earth and helped form the moon, but the rest of Thera moved off and is on a geosynchronous orbit with the Earth, so we never see it.
Yeah, but the size of Jupiter plus, so I don't know.
We wouldn't be able to see it past the sun if it's in geosynchronous.
Yeah, but see all their, like, their gravity and stuff, though. They would notice that. I think they would pick that up.
Yeah, you'd think, but us humans are not very smart.
Anyway, mine's in another solar system and maybe even another universe. I haven't decided that for space travel yet.
You use that temporal distortion, don't you? To port people.
I do think it'd be funny, though, to run into either a... I think it'd be funny for a Star Trek ship to run into an Andradian battle cruiser, though.
What's this? It is an Andradian battle cruiser. A what? A very warlike group of primitive humans that managed space travel with warp technology.
Who's calling us primitive? We were going to offer you some wine and maybe some tea. Now we're going to vaporize you.
See what I mean about primitive?
Hey, whatever works. We'll be back with the three-parter after this.
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Podcasting from their secret satellite headquarters.
Dude, it's your kitchen.
Three friends gather around the dais of discourse,
like at your mom's kitchen table,
to battle boredom and bash finality,
armed with only a fistful of comics and games.
Okay, Night Ranger, it looks like you've angered the Kobold Shaman, and he's about to cast a spell at you. What do you do?
Is he wearing boots?
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, it might cause arcane spell failure.
Okay, yes, he's wearing high hard leather boots.
Well, in that case, I'll attack with my longsword.
Okay, roll to hit.
13.
That's a miss.
Working man?
What is it, Tangent? Can't you see that we're playing Keep on the Borderlands?
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but we just got an urgent email from the Inker from Mutant Warrior Base on the planet Zargon, and he wants to know what our podcast is all about. What do you want me to tell him?
Well, tell him that we're a roundtable discussion with a revolving cast.
Okay, I've got that. Now what?
Well, tell him that we have topics about comics, games, and other related media, like TV, movies, and novels.
Okay, I've got that.
Well, don't forget to tell him about our comics, gaming, and sci-fi convention coverage.
Well, yeah, and our interviews with game and comic creators.
Yeah, sounds like everything he needs to get his geek on.
Well, I'll just finish up by saying that you can reach us at www.fistfulofcomics.com.
That's great. Now can we get back to our game?
Well, I want to keep you.
Okay, great. All right, so he finishes casting his spell, and he fires a magic missile at you. Take 3 points of damage.
But I have boots on.
We're back with yet another three-parter. Today, Nathan's going to give us a nice review, I'm going to rant on something, and Jeremy's got character, as he is the resident NPC guru. So we're going to go ahead and start off with the review, as per usual.
Okay.
The review.
Well, as I've probably stated in many, many, many other three-parters, when it comes to games, I don't just play role-playing games. And a couple months ago, I picked up a game, well, not a couple months ago, when it came out in January, I believe it was January 16th, I went out and picked up a game called Lost Planet, Condition Zero or something like that, just Lost Planet, which came out on the Xbox 360. It has multiplayer functionality and a single-player story. I've been playing it. Not super far in it, but wanted to just give a little bit of a review on it. One of the first things I noticed is it's very hard to actually unlock the achievements. For those of you out there who are achievement freaks, getting the points from the achievements is very difficult. I am at level 3, and I think I have 100 points unlocked.
What type of game is it?
It is a third-person shooter science fiction game. It takes place on another planet called Eden that is colonized by humans after they try to escape from the dying Earth. Upon landing on the planet, they find out that the planet is actually habitated by giant insectoid creatures. I can't remember the name of them. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been playing it. Since I've been playing Dead Rising, which more on that one later in another review. These animals and so these insects inside of them, when they finally figure out how to kill them, it takes a long time. They were losing the war for a long time. They found that they had this energy called T energy, or thermal energy. With the thermal energy, they could enhance their products and their gear to keep them alive in this cold winter environment, as well as power weapons to help them defeat more of the bug things. I'm on level 3, and so this is pretty much going to be a technical review and a story quality review. Since I'm not super far into the game yet, I can't tell you how the game ends. The level design is fairly mundane. Go from point A to point B, perform task C, take the completed object from task C, which is now object D, to point E. It involves a lot of shooting, lots of explosions. On the graphics side, I can say this. People talk about it being incredibly high-definition next-generation graphics. And yeah, it's got really good graphics, but the problem is after you play something like Gears of War, which I know anybody who has an Xbox 360 out there probably has played and probably owns, nothing will ever look as next generation, period. The game's graphics are very crisp, the textures are very well detailed, but the effect that actually floored me is the snow. The whole game takes place on a snow planet. Well, the nice thing is, a couple of levels you go through, there's snowstorms and stuff. And the way the snow blows, and the way it actually breezes up off the ground and stuff when a wind gust pulls up, is very realistic, which is very impressive to watch. And the way the light reflects off the snow and stuff is just incredible. Well, the snow effects are very great. And the sound, if you have a surround sound system hooked up to it, is Dolby Digital greatness of 5.1 channel surround. And it's always impressive to hear those bullets from the pirates whiz by your head, making you duck reflexively in your chair.
There's pirates?
Yeah, there's space pirates. Pretty cool. You get to take them out in giant mechanized robot suits.
Are there space ninjas?
I haven't gotten that far. I don't know if they're space ninjas, but the giant bugs are really awesome. You got like flying ones and these ones that look like something out of Starship Troopers. On the story side, the story so far is very confusing. You start off being some guy in the military. You watch your father die, then you escape away from the monster that killed your father. It's called Green Eye. You'll run into it in like the first 45 seconds of the game. I'm not giving anything away. You escape from this monster called Green Eye and escape out into the frozen wastes where your suit, you're in a mechanized suit, it fails because you run out of energy and you proceed to basically freeze to death. You're found by a group of people, and these people are weird. They hold secrets from each other. And they're obviously holding secrets from your character. And at this point in the game where I'm at, you don't know if they're good or bad, because there's just not enough information to go on, but there's something wrong with them. And I don't know if that's, you know, right or not, just something seems wrong with them. And I haven't had a chance to talk to many other people about it, so I couldn't tell you for sure anything about it. The story's confusing. Now onto the multiplayer aspect. Multiplayer aspect is pretty much a free-for-all. Play side versus side, or you can play a co-op, if I remember correctly. All I've played is the multiplayer versus, you know, all-out free-for-all. And the graphics remain stable, constant, no frame rate drop, no lag on my connection, but of course I do have an 8 megabit per second, cable modem connection. Graphics are great, the explosions are fantastic in multiplayer, and it's fast-paced fun for, you know, blowing the living daylights out of everything around you. Overall, as far as I am in the game, I would give the game probably an 8 out of 10. It's got some great things. I have some problems with the controls. The controls are kind of funky. When you're running, if you press back, instead of backing up, your guy actually turns around and runs towards the camera, which is kind of confusing. So you actually have to turn.
Ooh, I'd hate that.
you can't just back up unless you're in actual aim mode, which is a bit frustrating because when you're in aim mode, you move at a half your speed. But other than that, you know, it's the controls are laid out well enough that they're easy to pick up. It's just little problems like that. I don't like the way the energy system works because you pick up way too much energy in the game no matter what mode you're in. Just right off the top, so you don't have to worry about running out of energy, because they tell you in the game book that if you run out of energy, you start losing life. I've never been within 1,000 points of starting to lose life. I mean, that's how frequent the energy drops.
Maybe later levels.
I'm hoping, because at this point, like, I'll finish a level, I'll have like 9,000 T energy points. You know, it's like, oh wow, I was nowhere near having to worry about dying. Although it is cool that when you get injured, you do burn T energy, and it restores your life. So that's kind of cool. But I haven't seen any aspects of running low on energy yet. But other than that, I say it's a good game. I'd recommend it for anybody who likes science fiction third-person shooters. It uses the same type of camera aspect, angle, for combat, as does Gears of War. So if you like Gears of War, and you like the sci-fi aspect, I would recommend renting Lost Planet and seeing what you think. If you like Gears of War, another one I would recommend right off the top of my head is Rainbow Six Las Vegas. Hands down. Anybody who's played it will tell you the same. But that's it for me. Now we're going to move on to the next section, which would be
the rant.
The rant.
Well, I'm going to be ranting.
You got a rant,
Ethan.
I have a rant. Now, yes, went and saw a movie a couple weeks back called The Messengers. Yeah, not a very good movie. Wasn't too impressed. But, you know, I've noticed this thing with horror movies nowadays going this route, and it's really starting to piss me off. The concept that for a movie to be scary, it also needs to be gory. Now, as we all know, that's bull.
Smurf.
Just go back and watch anything Alfred Hitchcock ever did, and you'll see that, one, it's not gross, but two, it's scary. The idea of something being scary is something being suspenseful or tense, not necessarily, ew, that's gross. Movies like Saw 12, Saw 415... The Hills Have Eyes, anything like that is just an overblown snuff film to me. It's just, hey, let's see how many buckets of gore we can just dump on camera just to gross people out. That's not being a scary movie. That's not a horror movie. That's just disgusting. You know, movies like the House of 1,000 Corpses that just make you...
Oh, God.
Or like the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Movies that just sort of leave you feeling dirty. And you just feel like you just want to leave and take a shower because, well, it wasn't scary. Sure, there were surprises in it and the cheap, you know, something pops out in front of the camera and you weren't expecting it scares you. But that's going to scare you no matter what. You're not sitting there on the edge of your seat being, you know, actually being scared or tense. I dare you to watch Psycho or Rear Window or anything like that or some of the early horror movies like The Haunting, the original Haunting, not the remake from 1998 because that one sucked. You know, watch those movies and you know, it's they're not gory, there's not blood being splattered all over the walls. It's something that'll actually 100% give you a nice creepy scary feeling. Or the Poltergeist movie, the first Poltergeist is a great example. A movie done by Tobe Hooper, for God's sake, the guy who did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, one of the movies I hate most in this world. evidence that man can actually make a scary movie is Poltergeist. It's a movie that's not gross, it's actually a scary movie. You watch it, you are genuinely creeped out by it. Another good example is the TV show Supernatural. Has a good way of just doing stuff that'll scare you, doing stuff that'll just creep you out, and they don't do it in, hey, let's, you know, spray blood everywhere.
Although they have done that in a couple scenes.
They have done that, but, I mean, it's not
There's
nearly
a
as bad.
Their blood and then just a blood bath. Of,
yeah.
Just
there's
nothing.
Difference in that and then, you know, lawnmower. It just gets annoying, you know. It's like, and you get these scary movies, these so-called horror movies that come out, and really all they do is just show you just gore on the screen, and you might as well just watch something stupid like Faces of Death or whatever, and watch, you know, people shoot each other, because it's the same stupid thing, you know. I'm sick of these movies coming out where it's just a rehash of the same old bloody plot, where you have people get into a situation, and the monster attacks them and slowly kills each one of them off. Or the haunted house tale where, one, either the ghosts are benevolent and trying to warn you about a serial murderer that's trying to kill you, or two, the ghosts are trying to kill you horribly and there's not really anything you can do about it, but the ghosts want to kill you in horrible, 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 horrible ways. There's no point.
That being said, though, there was a movie that follows that vein that was really good, that was gory, that had its horror moments, too, on top of the gore, The House on Haunted Hill.
Yes, but...
That movie was very
gory.
That
was good. That is an exception to the rule. But it was not an overly gory movie. It was not. You compare it to Saw, Saw 2, Hills Have Eyes, any of those movies nowadays, House of a Thousand Corpses.
House of a Thousand Corpses.
That was actually a well-written movie and was actually relatively entertaining and characters like that you actually cared about, whereas like movies like that and you know, Wrong Turn, stuff like that, it's just disgusting.
I liked Wrong Turn. It was horribly terrible, but I thought it was amusing to watch. But you are correct. It is incredibly gory.
There's no point to have this gore on film.
There's a difference between the funny gore or...
Like Evil Dead 2.
Evil Dead 2.
That's gory to the point of absurdity. You watch that and laugh. But then you watch a movie like The Hills Have Eyes, and you're just like, ew, that's just disgusting.
That movie is disgusting. But look at Dead Alive. That movie is grotesquely
gory. Yeah, but that's another one that's gory to the point of absurdity.
It has you
and
saying
it doesn't take
the
itself seriously.
Oh my god! Like he pulls out the lawnmower, puts it on a rope.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
But that's funny.
But it's just annoying me nowadays. Also keep in mind that House on Haunted Hill was made back in 1998, 1999.
Was it?
Yeah, so it's 8 years old now.
God, is it really
so, there just isn't any.
It's just the movies nowadays, the horror movies coming out nowadays are all like Saw 3.
And what we have coming out now, coming soon, is Yippee.
And these remakes from Japan.
House of Hills Have Eyes 2.
Yeah, and these remakes from Japan are, you know, they're okay, but they're still being Hollywoodized and just made entirely just too stupid for words.
Yeah, you
see the new Dark Water? The new Dark Water was terrible.
But the Japanese version
was creepy. Yes, there's no need for anything to be gross in a horror movie. It just needs to scare you.
The
original The Grudge? Much better than the American version. The Ring. The original Ring in Japan was very different from the American version. It was sufficiently scary. That being said, though, the American version of The Ring
I like the American
very good
version
as well.
Of The Ring. But the thing is, that movie is the one that started this whole thing of ghost story movies. And it's like movies like that came out, and you know, The Pulse and stuff like that. It's like, please
there's
stop
too many
this
of them.
Ripoff
there's
crap.
There's too many
I,
of them.
I watched, we rented Pulse.
And they're making two direct-to-DVD sequels of it.
We rented the underrated version. It's not bad, but the thing is you sit there and watch it, and you know exactly what's going to happen. It's not gory, either. They minimize the gore in that. Mm-hmm. But you know what's going to happen.
See, and then occasionally you get good gems of movies come out. Like, I liked Silent Hill. Silent Hill was a movie for kids, and it was gory, but it wasn't overly gory. They didn't do gore for the sake of gore. It was a scary movie. It was genuinely a creepy movie.
My thing about
last
Silent
scene
Hill was
pretty...
Yeah, the last scene was over the top, but the thing
but
was it worked with the movie. My problem with Silent Hill was there were just scenes that put you in such a horrible, an advanced state of fear. Like when you run into those screaming child things in the movie.
Or those nurses. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But the screaming child thing, it was so bad in the theater, the soundless that they're making. If the scene had been any longer, I swear to God, people would have been running out of the theater screaming with their sanity snapped. It was so terrifying.
Those nurses that were just standing there, every time you move, they would move.
Yeah, you just... But yeah, I really liked Silent Hill. When that movie came out on DVD, I immediately ran out and picked it up. So
yeah,
and they're making a sequel.
In the Mouth of Madness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's another good one. That movie had some violence in it, but it was not gory.
That boy at the beginning just on the bike.
Yeah, I can't leave.
And as he's just riding by, you look over at him and you're like, first of all, it's nighttime, and that kid, what is wrong with that child?
Oh my god, it's poof!
Yeah.
That stuff's just creepy stuff, you know? I mean, there's no reason why anything needs to be gory like that. And horror movies nowadays just go along the lines of, hey, let's just put a lot of splatter on the screen, and that'll scare people.
You know what,
and
actually,
I hate that.
You know what I actually,
the reason why I don't like the Friday the 13th movies, or the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, or the Hellraiser movies. Just, I don't like those movies because they have too much splatter in it.
Hellraiser is only good when he's talking about evil and the, you know, the punishment and the evil. Mm-hmm. That's the only
time. Typically,
it's
the
good.
First movies are good, and then from then on, it just stupid.
The second
fest.
One is not bad. Hellraiser 2 is not bad. Hellraiser 3 sucks. Anything past Hellraiser 3 and on is just terrible.
You know, like Hellraiser Bloodlines?
The violence
that was funny.
And the blood has its place. It has its place in, you know, certain games. I mean, it has its place, yeah. But they've just gone on this major just
yeah.
gore fest.
It's yeah, and it's really getting annoying.
Honestly, I think the movie that started the gore fest back up, I think actually stems all the way back to 1997 and Event Horizon. Event Horizon was a horror movie, but it was incredibly gory. Like the scene where the guy gets gutted. I mean, that was not.
And at first, the first time we saw that movie, that scared the crap out of us.
Scared the
hell out of us. As time went on, we were watching it going, oh, this movie really isn't that good.
Yeah.
It just saddens me when a movie like Saw 3 comes out and it's number one at the box office.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is the concept that we're giving to our children and everything, that this is what a scary movie is?
Well,
no, thank you.
And that's the
funny
thing.
Look at Alien. Alien was a horror movie, too. It's still scary to this day.
That's the funny thing that gets me. Okay, anything sexuality, we have to hide all that. If a person happened to be a little bit nude, we have to hide all that. But then we could have somebody get their head sawed off, blood spraying, and our society's okay with that.
It's really annoying.
What is with that?
And, you know, see a movie like, you know, House of a Thousand Corpses? Go ahead. If you like that, don't email me.
Or The Devil's...
That movie just disgusted me.
The Devil's Rejects, the follow-up?
I refuse to even see it. We're done.
My problem is it's all right for violence, but not all right for nudity. And yet people wonder why our country is such a horribly violent culture now. People are murdering people in the streets over a freaking PlayStation 3, a video game console, which now you can find pretty much anywhere you go. Everybody's got them. But we have people murdering people over these stupid things.
It all goes back to the PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
Damn you, Sony.
It's all Sony's fault.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll be back with We've Got Character.
We've Got Character.
I'm actually going to put a disclaimer with this, because I don't know if we have any players out there who happen to be gay, but I'm going to do Remy.
Yes!
Go ahead.
Remy's fine, but I'm going to also point out, because that brings to something else, you have to know your players, and you don't want to, you know, because we laugh about it, but
Remy rocks.
Other people might not, so I'm going
right.
I love Remy. Remy is awesome.
Go for it.
Okay, the character I have now is a character in my most recent, NPC in my most recent game. I'd like to throw this out. This isn't meant to, none of my NPCs, while they might play on some stereotype sometimes, nothing's meant to offend at all, and this is something you want to make sure that you know your players before you use any type of stereotype and or type of character. But Remy is a very high-class, somewhat educated, gay, orcish butler. He dresses very nicely. He's a great guy, a great cook. He loves bubble baths.
Great NPC. He's awesome.
He also has a thing for a particular dwarf. And he did end up actually accidentally, because of some pixies, in bed with that particular dwarf.
Stupid pixies.
I believe there was a goat involved too, but...
Stupid goat.
Remy was actually the butler of... Makir and the Mage and his wife, Ilishendra, which, as people point out, when they find out Makir and his wife is dead, they're like, well, wasn't she a dragon? But that's neither here nor there. We'll do her later. We'll do their characters later. But Remy was their butler. And there was some escapades where some pixies accidentally tranced. The pixies were trying to have some fun and accidentally teleported Remy as well as... Ethan's character,
Akon,
to a random city. Now, unfortunately, the city was run by Zealots. Zealots on my world are these individuals who follow the prophet Marcus Zeal. Now, Marcus Zeal, what he believed in was very pure, but a lot of the Zealots have taken his belief and twisted it. Zealots hate anything that's not human. And they also believe... Basically, an orc, especially a gay orc, is the most horrible thing in existence. Well, actually, female mage elves are worse.
They're all basically from...
An elf who happens to be female and a mage would be worse than that. But either way, the Zealots decided they were going to execute Remy, as well as they were going to retrain Hakon. Now, when they appeared, when Hakon and Remy appeared, they appeared in an inn, in the same bed. And a goat wandered out of the room. And Remy's first words were, "I only like orcish men."
Which was the first indication we had that he was gay.
Yeah, at that point. Now, Remy, like I said, is a lot of fun. My group has a lot of fun with him. I think they really want him to be fine and safe, and they don't want anything bad to happen to him. They do ask about Remy when he's not around. And, again, he does play on... Remember, we're in Kansas. That's not an excuse. He plays on a stereotype. Now...
People have to understand, I also have a...
We are all...
He's the greatest guy I know.
Whenever we do an NPC, there is a chance of playing off of stereotypes in real life. That happens. You just need to talk to your players. You need to make sure it doesn't get out of hand. You can have some fun, but just don't... You don't want to offend anyone. So, you know, shake things up a little bit. Have an orcish butler, whether gay or not. But yeah, Remy. Everybody seems to like him.
Yeah,
great character. Great NPCs.
We'll be back after this.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
All games considered promo, take one. Carol, you max out on charisma while Chris and I play a drop of Nelson's blood.
Wait, what's this in the script about a Monty Python ripoff?
Mark, haven't these been done already?
Well, we need some kind of gimmick.
We don't need a gimmick. We just need to tell people that All Games Considered is a podcast about tabletop gaming. Gamers...
And gamer culture.
Gamer culture.
Just go with it.
Yeah. We talk about board games, role-playing games, ways to improve your game. Might even help you save a little cash with cheap gaming tips.
And other little-known games people may want to try.
And we can always point out neat conventions to go to.
Good. Keep going.
And I suppose they can find that information along with the RSS feeds, Frapper Map and Forum links, and show notes on allgamesconsidered.blogspot.com.
And?
We're part of PEN's Gaming Podcast Network and Goblin, the Gaming Broadcast Network.
Right, but how do we work the Mythic Heroes journey into that?
Never mind. Just listen to the show.
Hey, you guys, do you hear something? I think I hear the flower children calling.
Well, like I said in the intro, there's not any random encounters this time around, but we really didn't give you much to go off of last week. You can hear my dog barking in the background there. Not much else going on this week, guys, so I'm just going to sort of let it go and kick into the end stuff, and hope to see you guys next week. Take care. Bye.
You can visit us on the web at CanadianCrusaders.FistfulOfComics.com. You can visit our website there, leave us an audio. You can call our voicemail line at 206-984-4122. Leave a message on the Frapper map. You can drop us an email at ThousandMonkeysProductions@gmail.com. And you could also just visit the forums on Fistful of Comics. We have our own little section there.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
Expect no mercy if you head out of west.
Gamers Haven is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike 2.5 license, and is hosted by the fine folks at www.fistfulofcomics.com and is a Thousand Monkeys production.
Now there's just one rule, and it's go eye for an eye. And if you swallow the drone,
Outtakes? You want outtakes? Well, guys, I put all the outtakes in the last episode. So, deal with it and stuff. What, are you waiting for me to be funny? I'm not funny. What?